Hi, everybody. I'm Dennis Prager. This is my weekly fireside chat, and it really is weekly. We don't miss a week, which is remarkable given how much I travel, given COVID, and it shows you my commitment to doing this every week. This is Otto, the world famous bulldog. It's rare that I go anywhere that people do not say, "How's Otto?" or "Say hi to Otto." And people are starting to even add his brother Snoopy, which is really remarkable. What this is just a sort of free form of thought. What's on my mind, I share with you, then I take your questions that you send in. It's number 246, which is that right?
226.
226. I missed by 20. See, now that's an example of something I would think, should we edit that out? And then I think, no, it's precious that I missed by 20. Anyway, it proves it's spontaneous, if nothing else. 226. Oh, that reminds me, very recently, I think in Texas, at a PragerU event, in fact, a man came over to me, and you will really love this, Megan. He said, "I just want you to know, I discovered you relatively recently. I don't remember how, but he did. So I watched your fireside chat, and then I binged on 220 fireside chats." And he said, "When I got to the last one, I was depressed. I have to wait another week just to see one." So that's really something. And I mention this to you because I truly do believe that if you've seen them all or seen none, watching them all is an education. There's a lot of very, very important stuff said in every one of these fireside chats, either in my opening comments or in answers to questions or in both. So I just throw that out as an idea to do it with a friend, your significant other, your kids, whatever it might be. Some people listen and don't watch. It's fine with me as long as the ideas get through. But obviously it's fun to watch. But either way. So I just thought I'd share that with you. So the one thing that I do plan in advance is my opening comments. And advance means right before I come on the fireside chat. I don't mean for days. And I really basically leave it up to Megan. It gives you an idea of my trust in her and respect of her, respect for her. And Megan was mentioning that a lot of people were commenting on the maskless elites at the Super Bowl. And how people who in Hollywood and in politics who were excoriating people to always wear masks were seen without masks. In one case, there was a politician, I don't remember which, who was adamant about masks and was posing for a picture with kids, all of whom were wearing masks. It's like mind-boggling. And of course, you will remember during the nadir of the lockdowns, or the height of the lockdowns, if you wish, when the governor of California was found after, you know, draconian laws with regard to mask wearing and isolation, and he's having a big dinner in a restaurant in California, the governor of California, without a mask, for his $15,000 meal at a place called the French Laundry. I tell you, these elites live a very difficult life. And so there was also Nancy Pelosi. There was a video of her, the pro-lockdown Nancy Pelosi, and she was in a hair salon walking around. First of all, normal mortals were not even allowed to go to hair salons. They had to be closed. I went to one wherein they were just like a speakeasy during the Prohibition. And they she was open. You had to knock on the door. She saw who was there. It was really remarkable. And it never meant a thing to me, all of this. I lived it as normal a life as a human could. As you can recall, if you actually watched the lockdown era fireside chats. But people call these people hypocrites, which they are, but I don't think that's the most important aspect, that they're hypocrites. I think the most important aspect is they don't really believe in what they're saying. This is an exercise in control that these people deeply believe in. You know, I often say the world is divided between, and then I, you know, like between the moody and the unmoody, as an example, okay? Between the athletic and the non-athletic. I mean, you could have 100 different, the world is divided by. So here's another one. The world is divided into those who like to control, those who like to control people, and those who don't. It's really fascinating. And you know what? I don't think we understand each other. I have a zero desire to control anyone, even my children. I mean, I wanted to control them when they were young because I wanted to control their bad behavior. That's a separate issue. But now that they're grown, it doesn't even occur to me, let alone control anybody in my life, friends or my wife. But I don't want to control anybody. I don't want to control strangers. But every one of you knows somebody in your personal life who is a controlling personality. I would assume everyone does. Maybe you don't because you don't let them in to begin with. You have a sort of detector who's like that. But most people have had such a person in their life, and they're awful. They're truly awful. But there is an entire group of tens of million, 100 million people. This is not just a handful of people in certain families who want to control others' lives. That's what progressives want to do, so-called progressives. They want to control you, what you eat, what you spend, how much you spend, where you go, how you travel. I mean, it's endless. What you can say, for those of us who don't want to control others, it is like telling me that people like to eat tree bark. I don't understand why anybody would enjoy tree bark. I have the same incapacity to understand people who want to control others. Leave me alone and I'll leave you alone. I don't know why that is not like essential to human nature, but it isn't. It's essential, but it's not part of human nature, apparently. The American experiment was a state that left you alone, that did as little as possible in your life, that interfered in your life as little as possible. This was the American dream and only the American dream. The idea of, that's what limited government means. It is the great dream of America. It's why America succeeded so spectacularly. It left most of its citizens alone. That's why Ronald Reagan was quoted and over for his famous statement, government is not the solution, government is the problem. But for people on the left or progressives or woke, whatever term you wish to use, the government is the bigger, the better. By the way, I am now convinced big everything is bad. Big pharma, big labor, big corporations, big government. I don't know what is big that's good. Big medicine. They're too big and they're too powerful and they're too arrogant. But people believe in it. Like that will be a good thing. Where has it ever been a good thing? So when you see these people at the Super Bowl wearing masks, or pictures of them, or the Pelosi, or the Newsom videos, it's not just that they're hypocrites. It's that they just want to control because they don't believe in it for themselves. Why would Gavin Newsom risk his life? If he truly believed masks save lives, why would he have risked his life and the lives of those with him at dinner? But because he didn't believe it. That's the amazing thing. That's much worse than hypocrisy. You know, there are parents who tell their kids, I told my kids, don't curse. I didn't want my kids cursing. Did I never curse? It's not, of course I did. You know, as I say, if a piano bench or if a piano falls on your toe and you say, gosh darn it, you're a better man than me. Okay. I would have come out with an expletive. So does that make me a hypocrite? I tell my kids they shouldn't curse, and yet sometimes such words come out of me, even sometimes deliberately, privately telling a joke. It doesn't make me a hypocrite, but even if it did, okay, that would be my great sin. But I do believe in when I say don't curse. I do believe in it. They don't believe in it when they say wear masks. That's the difference. Because if it saved lives, they'd want to save lives. They'd want to save their own and others. That's what's so frightening. Now, there are people who really believe in it, but not the people who were telling you about this. That's the irony. So that's the lesson to be learned. They don't really believe it, which makes the sin all the greater, and especially with children. Do you know that in Sweden, the entire 2 years of COVID, they had school for kids. Schools were open. Not only were they open, the only country that I know of in the West for which that is true, but they also did not ask the kids to wear masks. Not one kid died. In my column this week, I actually cite the Swedish doctors in the New England Journal of Medicine writing about not one kid died with all their open schools. Everything the rest of the world did was wrong. And I am proud to tell you I said this in April 2020. I tweeted this is the greatest mistake in history. And I talked about it at this fireside chat. It's all there on the record. And I was, as usual, mocked for it. Doesn't mean a thing to me. It just verifies when I see who's mocking me that I was probably right. What was done to kids with masks, for example? Let me read to you one thing. It's from my column on masks, a very recent column. You could find it easily. Masking, this is from the University of Southern California, USC Center for Health Policy and Economics. Masking is a psychological stressor for children and disrupts learning. Covering the lower half of the face of both teacher and pupil reduces the ability to communicate. In particular, children lose the experience of mimicking expressions, an essential tool of nonverbal communication. Positive emotions such as laughing and smiling become less recognizable, and negative emotions get amplified. Bonding between teachers and students takes a hit. Overall, it is likely that masking exacerbates the chances that a child will experience anxiety and depression, which are already at pandemic levels themselves. The damage done to children through all of these idiotic policies of lockdowns and masks is incomparable. More young people have died of suicide than of COVID. What do you say to that? So let's hope that they don't take down this video. Because remember why they would. And this is a very important rule of life. There is no example in the history of the last 100 years since the Russian Revolution, when the left first came to power, that the left has ever been in power in any institution or any country and allowed dissent, allowed differing opinions to be aired. There is no example wherever the left takes power, alternate views of life are suppressed. Again, there is no example. Liberals do not suppress dissent, and conservatives do not. But the left does. Okay. Oh, yes. No need for Megan's arm. Okay, here we go. I hope if I go up like that and then go up again. Wow. Took a long time for me to learn that. And let's go to the video question. Okay.
Hello there, Dennis. I hope you're doing well today. My name is Jackie Ferrari. I'm a current sophomore at Pepperdine University. I'm originally from Atlanta. Love watching your videos. Thank you for all that you do. So my question is, I'm trying to figure out what news sources that you would suggest I go to do research on things that are unbiased. Because a lot of the research I've done on different topics, such as gun laws and America being, you know, one of the best countries in the world, I found stuff that goes against what conservatives are saying, and I'm trying to find, like, I absolutely agree with conservatives on those things, but I'm trying to find stuff that is unbiased. So what news sources would you recommend that actually tell the truth on those topics? Thank you so much.
Well, that's a very important question. Okay, so Jackie, thank you. So rather than unbiased, because I don't know if any human is, whatever that means, is completely unbiased, I would ask, what is likely to give me more truth than non-truth? I prefer the word truth, and I'm sure it's fine with you. So I have made it my business in my throughout my life to read both sides of issues. And then I have great faith in common sense. Now, common sense, as Mark Twain put it, isn't common, which that's a big problem. But I think a lot of people do have common sense, and I wish they trusted it more. So, for example, the left will say America was built on slavery. It was built by slaves. So that's their claim. So you need to read something that responds to that argument. So I have created with Alan Estrin, PragerU, to provide people with truth-oriented answers to all of these things. And of course, that's why I've written my books, and that's why I do my radio show. So for example, there's a very simple response to that. There's virtually no truth to it. Number one, the half of America that had slaves was the poorer half, much poorer than the North. The South was much economically poorer. So if slavery made wealth, it made wealthy individuals. But if it made society wealthy, the South would have been richer than the North. The North didn't have slavery. The South did. The South was poor. The North was rich, comparatively speaking, obviously. That's pretty powerful, no? How about this? This is even more powerful. If slavery made countries rich, Brazil would be the richest country in the Western Hemisphere. Brazil had about, I don't know, 10 times as many slaves as the United States? 8 times? 5 times? I don't know exactly. We in the United States brought 350,000, 360,000 across the Atlantic as slaves. They had, I don't know, 8 million, 7 million. I mean, it's incredible how many more slaves and more time slaves, exponentially more than the United States. But Brazil's a poor country relative to the United States. Why is that? If slaves make rich countries. So there's no truth to the claim that slavery built America. It's just not true. This doesn't deny the horrors of slavery, obviously. One of the horrors of slavery, ironically, is not just what it does to slaves, what it does to the society. It keeps it backwards. It hurts the slaves, number one, and it hurts society, number two. So there are answers to all of these things. And you need to find it. That's why we exist, to provide you these answers. If you find them wanting, then you ask us questions. Tell us why you find it wanting. With 500 videos out there on so many subjects, you'll get a lot of information. It's all free, so I'm not saying this. There's no monetary interest in my telling you this. It's just that's why we exist. There are answers to these untrue charges. Now, I would also regularly read certain things to counter the charges you hear at schools and in the media. I would read every day the Wall Street Journal editorial page. That's an example. I do. And the comments section, the op-ed, as they say, opinion section. There's an editorial and an opinion section. So that's on a daily basis. There are spectacular websites. I'm always afraid to mention them because I know I'll leave out some I love, but at the risk of doing so, Daily Wire is terrific, and American Greatness is terrific, and townhall.com is terrific. I mean, there are so many wonderful sources for you. Pajama Media, what is the another one? American Thinker. Let me tell you this. If America fails, and the left wants it to, if it does, it won't be for lack of a lot of people telling the truth. There are many voices of eloquence telling the truth out there. Okay, Jesselyn, 25 years old, Delta Junction, Alaska. Hi, Dennis, Megan's Arm, Snoopy and Otto, big fan of your show. I listen all the time. Anyone who notes Megan's Arm and Snoopy is a giveaway. You've talked about traveling around the world, but have you ever been to Alaska? Do you ever have a desire to travel here? I'm a teacher and we're having a snow day today due to a wind chill of minus 45. Oh, I envy you. And because the roads have high drifts of snow, I'm realizing now I probably shouldn't tell you this if I ever want you to visit. How about you come in the summer? Thank you for all you do. Okay, number one, I've been to all 50 states. That's something I'm very proud of, but that's been true. Went to Alaska a couple of times. I've lectured there. I've taken people on a cruise there. And I am coming again to lecture this May. And you should all know, if you want to know where I will be, go to DennisPrager.com. Where's Dennis? Simple as that. There's a Where's Dennis section at DennisPrager.com. So I know that they already sold out one lecture, so they asked me to give a second lecture, and I said yes. So I'm giving two lectures in Anchorage, and I love Alaska. I really do. It's a great place, not just for the great scenery. I enjoy being there. Caitlin, 24 years old, North Webster, Indiana. Hello, Mr. Prager. Hello. I'm a second grade teacher at a small private school. I love teaching and I love my students, but I'm struggling a bit with classroom management. What consequences do you think are appropriate to give misbehaving students? Losing some of recess, writing sentences, calling parents. I try to keep things positive and motivating, but when certain behaviors occur, it seems there should be some kind of negative consequence. Do you think those consequences are appropriate for a school setting, or should it be left to the parents to punish their kids? By the way, I'm so thankful for your Otto's Tales videos. Great. I've used them quite a few times, and my students love them, especially the one about Christopher Columbus. Also, I love Brett Maverick, but you should give his brother Bart a chance. He's pretty cool, too. Thanks, and God bless. Now, I'll start with the end. I am asked all the time figures that influenced me. My dad did, and so did Brett Maverick, a completely fictional character in a TV series when I was a young kid. I consciously modeled my behavior on Brett Maverick. He also had a brother, Bart, and they alternated weeks, and I didn't watch the Bart Maverick. I know you, Caitlin, like Bart as well. I was just a Brett fan. What did I model? His ability to remain calm under the most difficult circumstances. And I said, that's how I want to react. And I taught myself to do that. People are often comment how calm I am on the radio. I mean, I get angry periodically because certain things anger me, but people call up and say all sorts of things, and I stay cool and just like on the fireside chat. I got that from Brett Maverick. Just want to say. So let's see. Okay. So kids misbehave in class. What consequence? If misbehave, if they're disrupting the class, it's a completely selfish thing to do. By the way, I disrupted class a lot, and they threw me out of class, and they were right to. I knew that at the time. I was bored out of my mind, and this will blow all of your minds. It blows my mind to tell you this. What did I do, among other things? So I would talk to my friends, and I would crack jokes. And whatever else I did in class. So I would get thrown out and I'd go to the principal's office. I was in the principal's office so often in eighth grade that they actually said, this is the Dennis Prager chair. They named the chair in the principal's office after me. It was not a compliment, just for the record, but they did find me charming and I knew that. Because everybody in the principal's office liked me. And I was told when I left elementary school, we looked forward to your coming every day. I had a very different, I'm a different guy, so I had a different world which I lived. So I would be in the office, and one of the things thinking about this. About this question, I remember this as the part that'll blow your minds. I hand wrote because we didn't have word processors or anything like that at the time. I hand wrote in eighth grade about every few weeks something I called the Prager University Bulletin. And needless to say, I would pay thousands of dollars to have one copy of one of them. Wouldn't that be awesome? Prager University Bulletin in eighth grade. And it was really what it was a satirical review of life in the eighth grade. That's what it was. So it really it's fascinating. It had a tremendous impact on me having being bored. I made the best of it, but I was thrown out of class. And periodically, my parents would be called in. You can't keep a disruptive kid in your class. What do you mean you wait for the parents to punish them? You kick them out. Incidentally, I will just share with all of you another anecdote from my early life. I taught high school kids while I was in graduate school, so in my early 20s, and I would part-time teach high school kids. And it was called Hebrew school. It's like Sunday school in Christian life. This was Hebrew school for Jewish kids. So I think twice a week, I would go in. I lived in Manhattan because I was at Columbia University, and then I would drive into Brooklyn and teach these kids. And I announced at the first session the following. I said, listen, it is my task as your teacher to keep you interested. If I fail, don't bother coming. And if you pass the exam, I will give you a high grade. I will not penalize you for not showing up. It's my task to get you to want to show up by being interesting. Isn't that amazing? That's what every teacher should think. I have a task as a student. You have a task as a teacher. It's your task to keep me interested. Otherwise, you shouldn't be in that position. A boring teacher is not a good teacher. I'm sorry. So that takes extra effort to be to be interesting. And it takes a passionate love of the subject. It means you have to figure out, gee, how do I hold their interest? You can teach the most interesting subject in the world and be boring. You could teach the most boring subject in the world and be interesting. The teacher is who makes the difference. Braden, 16 years old, Idaho Falls, Idaho. Out of all the trips you made in your early life, the Soviet Union, England, and so forth, which had the greatest impact on you? Well, if you're talking about the early trips, clearly the Soviet Union had a spectacularly powerful impact on me. To actually enter an unfree country, a dictatorship, a totalitarian state. And since I spoke Russian, I understood what they were saying on those billboards, the propaganda billboards, like «Вперед к коммунизму», «Forward to communism», «Слава советскому народу». I still remember the signs, because there were no ads for private enterprise. There was no private enterprise. There were no Coca-Cola ads. There was Communist Party ads. «Слава советскому народу», «Hail to the Soviet people», or my favorite, «Lenin жил, Lenin живет, Lenin будет жить». Lenin lived, Lenin lives, Lenin will live. How's that? That's all you could see. That's it. No ads. For people who laugh at capitalism and private enterprise, you go to a country where there were no ads. All there are signs for the party and the government. That's what you would have. That's depressing. Anyway, that made a big impact on me. Israel made a big impact on me, which I went to right after the Six-Day War as a kid. But the truth is, every single country of the 130 countries I've been to has made an impact on me. It's one of the reasons I'm a big believer in travel. When you take in a different culture, different people, you become a richer human being, a deeper person. That is one of the great, great things of my life, my travels. All right, now binge. I'm Dennis Prager. This is Otto. See you next week. Thank you for watching this video. To help keep PragerU videos free, please consider making a tax-deductible donation.